Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
And it's summertime, Ken, and it's summertime means it's time for pandering to conventions held by special interest groups who want to hear the presidential candidates tell them exactly what they'd like to hear.
Wait, you didn't let me answer.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's pandering to special interest groups, to the people during the conventions of exactly what they want to hear.
Okay, and so this week, what were some of the contestants?
The contestants were Lulac.
Lulac.
Your girlfriend in high school.
Okay. Let's talk about La Raza.
Well,
let's talk about the NAACP.
Well, look, obviously, you have an African-American running as a major party candidate, which is the first time since in history.
Okay. I think we should probably mention that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So you think that John McCain has a tougher argument to sell at the NAACP.
There's some disagreement in the polls. Some polls are showing McCain currently polling 2% of the African-American vote this fall, 2%. Other polls show it closer to 1%.
Well, I've seen one that Obama's getting 103% of the African-American vote.
Okay, so what was John McCain doing there? What was he there for? Why was he even going
to
Cincinnati?
Well, either.
Didn't go last time. Didn't go last time they invited him.
No, and George W. Bush, of course, went in 2000 and didn't go again in 2006. But you know, that's kind of
interesting. He skipped five of them.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, the reason he didn't go, John McCain didn't go last year, is because there was no McCain for president campaign last year.
Well, that's not true. He was supposedly the front runner, but his campaign had fallen apart, and so he was cast out into the outer darkness, and he was in the wilderness, and there was no chance for him, and nobody was paying any attention to him. So he didn't feel like he even had to go to the NAACP.
He didn't go to, he didn't go to CPAC either, so it's not that he just skipped NAACP.
CPAC is not a maritime interest. CPAC is the Conservative Political Action Committee. And McCain didn't go there.
A convention. Well, okay, so here he is. He got polite applause. Ron, you have some actual footage of the applause that McCain got when he addressed the crowd. Let's hear it. That was pretty good. That was standing ovation, I think.
There was a kind of golf applause quality to it. But there was one time when he got a really good hand from the audience when he started talking about Barack Obama.
Don't tell him I said this, but he's an impressive fellow in many ways. He's inspired a great many Americans, some of whom had wrongly believed that a political campaign could hold no purpose or meaning for them. The success should make Americans, all Americans, proud. Of course, I would prefer his success not to continue quite as long as he hopes.
I thought that was a pretty good line.
He has such a sense of humor.
Yeah, the good line, I thought, was not only that one, which got a good laugh, but at the end of the speech, he told the group, I am going to seek your counsel. I am going to care what you think.
Whatever happens,
win or lose in November, right. But especially if I win.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a good line.
It was a good line. The question is, does he really expect to get black votes? I suspect he will not get any. I think perhaps maybe he's sending a message to white independents, white centrists, who may feel that he's just bent over too far to the right. You always see white candidates, even if they know they're not going to get black votes, by attending these conventions, by saying the right things, they at least are giving the appearance that they're seeking the votes of one segment or the other.
That's right, and I think Americans approve of that. They like to see a person act presidential, and that means being the president of all the people. And while he's passed now the primaries where he may have some worries on some of these subjects, now he's running in a November electorate where even people who consider themselves conservatives, good, solid Americans, would prefer that their president show all respect to, especially an organized group, an older group like the NAACP.
For all the incendiary rhetoric we're likely to hear between now and November, the fact is we still have two decent candidates, John McCain and Barack Obama, who I think their better instincts are to keep the rhetoric low and keep the temperament low.
Now, here's a good question. What happens when it comes time for the VFW and the American Legion to meet? Now, that's material for John McCain. That's his home park.
Yes, that's true. But have you ever heard Barack Obama get a tepid response from any group he's spoken to? I have not. Remember when Rudy Giuliani spoke before the NRA? I mean, the people didn't like him, but he got a good response. Barack Obama has just a way of saying the right things. Well, this may be one of the criticisms of Barack Obama, that he says
that he tailors his message, that he trims his sails, that he flips and he flops,
yeah,
and he caters to whomever he's hearing.
But not only that,
he's speaking to.
You still don't even have to change your rhetoric to speak to these kind of groups. I think they all, I mean, for the most part, if you talk about the same hope, change, patriotism language, you'll get a good response.
But that will be a place where John McCain will get a wildly enthusiastic response. I mean, he will get standing ovation after standing ovation when he talks to those groups. And I think Americans expect Barack Obama to go into that lion's den and see if he can keep his cool as well as McCain did at the NAACP, or La Raza, or LULAC.
Well, speaking of which, the fight for Hispanic votes is also probably even more intense because unlike the black vote, there is a serious battle for Hispanic votes. George W. Bush probably would not have been reelected president had he not done as well.
He got 40% nationally.
40%, which was far better than Republicans, I think, going back to...
Ever.
Ever, right. And he was one of our best presidents.
Absolutely. you remember his vice president?
But again, he's being tugged in two directions. One, he thinks there's an opportunity to get more Hispanic votes, at least do as well as Bush did in 2004 by trying to help illegal aliens reach the path to citizenship. But you also have the more the Tancredo wing of the Republican Party, which is probably not that insignificant, who say that the real issue is border security, and that's where the focus should be.
Enforce the law.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure,
so,
Tancredo ran for president himself for a while.
Yeah.
And didn't get very far.
You know, he carried the Tancredo household.
And he did at least make the point, and a lot of Republicans feel it's an important one, that we can't do anything with the whole issue of immigration until we secure the borders.
And now, that has been McCain's rhetoric as of late, which
as
is,
of late,
some people say it's a kind of a flip-flop, but it's also a reality.
It's a balancing.
Yeah.
It's a balancing, as many flip-flops are. It's an expression of how you have to balance competing interests if you're trying to take in the national
interest. Right. And he knows, John McCain knows, and he said this over and over again, that the immigration legislation he first co-sponsored doesn't have a chance of passing.
I see. Yeah. I see. And let me just say, in my role as an editor here at NPR, that when Ken used the phrase illegal aliens, he actually really said persons in the country unlawfully without documents.
Oh, wait a second. Oh.
Oh, that's what you said.
Oh, we can't say illegal aliens.
We don't use that phrase, Ken. It's offensive. Another controversy this week that arose from the bosom of the media and from that
city. Can you say the word media?
From that hotbed of media controversies, the island of Manhattan was centered around the magazine named for you, Ken, The New Yorker. The cover on The New Yorker.
Yes, it was. It was the alleged satire.
Alleged satire. It pictured the fantasy of... well, of many people who fear Barack Obama is secretly a Muslim and that his wife, Michelle, is secretly the reincarnation of Angela Davis or some other Black Panther radical with an AK-47 strapped across her back and bandoliers of bullets, you know, American flag burning in the Oval Office fireplace.
Or that,
you get the picture. Osama bin Laden's
picture. Or
that
real Black nationalist, Malcolm the Tenth.
Inside, we're told that it was supposed to have the logo... Politics of Fear. But we didn't see that on the cover because it didn't say anything on the cover.
Nor should we say that on the cover. I mean, everybody made such a big deal that this is satire run amok. I think that's the definition of satire.
I think it's always run amok.
It either works or it didn't work. I would argue that it did not work, but the point is for
them... But it certainly did work in the sense of getting people's attention, did it not?
Everybody's talking about it.
When was the last time that people knew that David Remnick was the editor of The New Yorker? I mean, usually that is not a magazine that is much in the news. It is a brilliant magazine. It is perhaps the most literate and maybe the most perspicacious political magazine in the country.
It is hot in here.
I would suggest... that it has made an enormous contribution to the coverage of this campaign. But all anybody's going to remember going forward is that cover. Is that fair? I put it to you, Ken.
Look, there are satires, there are drawings of George W. Bush that do not have anything to do with reality, but it's out there. You could think it's funny, you could think it's clever, you think it's witty, or you could think it's just tasteless. The Obama and McCain campaign both agreed that this went beyond the bounds of taste.
And they both condemned it.
They both condemned it, but I think we've made a much bigger deal of it than we should have. Often the cover of the New York magazine has nothing to do with what's inside the magazine.
But on some level, they're making fun of Barack Obama, and that alone has been to some degree verboten.
Well, you know, he's run such a perfect, careful campaign that there's not much to make fun of him, except...
Now, wait a minute.
What?
Is that the reason people are afraid to make fun of him, or is it because he is a very serious fellow and because he is the first Black nominee for president of a major party in America?
But people made fun of Jesse Jackson all the time.
Yeah, but they knew Jesse Jackson wasn't actually going to be the nominee, and Jackson seemed to be kind of inviting a certain kind of hurly-burly coverage.
Are you nuts?
And I don't think that Barack Obama is in that same category.
Right, that's true.
So... it has been hard to make jokes about Barack Obama to the point where comedians have started making jokes about how hard it is to make jokes.
But everybody else, you think of Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton, John McCain, and the age issue. Those jokes are
easy,
cheap, very easy, right?
Our kind of jokes.
Right, exactly.
But it's much harder to come up with a Barack Obama joke, witness some of the attempts.
Andy Borowitz, the very funny comedian.
Humorist.
Unlike the other comedians who are not so
funny.
He's
a humorist.
But he says, tongue-in-cheek, of course. I think we have to describe what's tongue-in-cheek now that nobody understands what's satire anymore.
Do we have to say tongue-in-cheek?
Well, we did with the New Yorker cover.
Okay, I guess we did.
He says, Obama releases a list of approved jokes about himself. This is actually a bid to help late-night comics who don't know how to deal with the Obama phenomenon in comedy.
Okay.
So anyway, he has five jokes. There are two I really think are very funny. Barack Obama and a kangaroo pull up to a gas station. The gas station attendant takes one look at the kangaroo and says, you know, we don't get many kangaroos here. Barack Obama replies, at these prices, I'm not surprised. That's why we need to reduce our dependence on foreign oil. Huh? It's so funny.
I hear the roars.
The other one is a horse walks into a bar. The bartender says,
why the long face?
I think that's hysterical.
It's an old joke.
Yeah. Barack Obama replies, his jockey just lost his health insurance, which should be the right of all Americans. These are hysterical jokes.
They are
hysterical
jokes. And
I don't know why people
don't
think he's not that funny.
If we've argued successfully that these are, in fact, hysterical, we could move on. Ken, there are other people running for president this year besides Barack and John McCain.
Well, we have third parties, and we have a new third-party official nominee last weekend in Chicago.
The Green Party.
The Green Party has put its imprimatur on Cynthia McKinney.
They better be careful about putting that on Cynthia McKinney.
Yeah, because she'll hit him with their cell phone.
Okay, we have three statements here, Ken. And I'm going to ask you which one was said by Cynthia McKinney, Green Party nominee, which one was said by Bob Barr, the Libertarian, and which one was said by independent candidate Ralph Nader.
Okay.
Ready, Ken?
Okay.
Part of the problem is even though the price of gasoline has gone up in the past year and even though every American that goes to the gas pumps recognizes that, I still don't think there is a sufficient realization of the magnitude of the problem and the permanency of the problem that we're facing and is going to befall us unless we do something about it. Which one of the three independent candidates or third-party candidates for president would you say said that?
Well, I would say all three could have actually said it, but okay, I'll say Ralph Nader.
I'm going to guess that's Cynthia McKinney.
Part of the problem is even though the price of gasoline has gone up.
Okay, so it was Bob Barr. We were both wrong. Candidate B said, so we shouldn't be surprised when we're reading the newspaper that we have CIA psychological operations agents stationed at the CNN newsroom. We shouldn't be surprised that the Bush administration would lie to the American people through the corporate media 935 times. I'm going to guess again, Cynthia McKinney.
I agree with you on that one.
So we shouldn't be surprised when we read in the newspaper that we have CIA psychological operations agents.
So we were
once
wrong
again,
because that
Barr
was clearly the voice
Bob
of Ralph Nader. Yeah. Through the process of elimination, we come to candidate C. In the criminal justice system, the people are represented by two separate yet equally important groups, the police who investigate crime and the district attorneys who prosecute the offenders. These are their stories.
That would be Jack Webb in Naked City. Dragnet.
In the criminal justice system, the people are represented by two separate yet equally important groups.
No,
it's the Fred Thompson show?
Law and Order. Yeah. Candidate D. The tide is going to turn against the corrupt politicians who are in the pocket of giant businesses, and the tide is going to turn so that the sovereignty of the people will prevail over the sovereignty of foreign nations as our framers of the Constitution envisioned it.
That was clearly Ralph Cramden. Ralph Nader.
Yes, it was Ralph Nader.
The tide is going to turn against corrupt politicians in the pockets of giant businesses.
But you know what? There's one third party and or slash independent party candidate we won't have to kick around anymore, Ken.
Who's that?
Jesse Ventura. We drove him out last week.
Well,
you said you thought he was going to run. I agreed with you. I thought he was going to run. We were both wrong.
Well, the reason is, remember he said that before George W. Bush invaded Iraq, he heard from God. Jesse Ventura said on Larry King's show last week that he did not hear from God.
But if between now and 5 o'clock, maybe God comes and speaks to me like he did the president and tells me I should run like he apparently told the president to invade Iraq, well, then maybe at 5 o'clock tomorrow, Larry, don't call me a liar. Just understand God sent me to file. How's that?
And he has complete distaste and contempt for both candidates, Norm Coleman, the Republican incumbent, and Al Franken, the likely Democratic nominee, but he would not get in the race. But did you know that Coleman versus Franken is the first time two Jewish candidates ran against each other for the Senate since Joe Lieberman and Alan Schlesinger in 2006 in Connecticut? Just thinking about that brings such tears.
It seems like only yesterday, or maybe 2 years ago.
It seems like 2 years ago, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other third-party candidates anywhere out there in the Senate races or gubernatorial races this year who might make a difference?
There's an interesting one. The Democrats are really high on trying to defeat Jim Risch. He's the Republican lieutenant governor of Idaho who is hoping to succeed Larry Craig.
Mm-hmm.
There was a right-wing independent candidate who thinks he's going to take 7-8% away from Risch to the benefit of Larry LaRocco, the Democrat.
Larry LaRocco, the Democratic nominee, former congressman.
Former congressman, who Jim Risch defeated for lieutenant governor in 2006. The same, coincidentally or not, the same year that Joe Lieberman was defeating Alan Schlesinger. It's amazing. Those are the only two things that happened in 2006.
As I'm sure the listener well remembers.
I can't imagine a Democrat winning a Senate race in Idaho. The last one, of course, was
Frank Church.
Frank Church in 1974. None since then. But it would be interesting to see if this third-party candidate could help the Democrats in Idaho. But there are not many other third-party candidates I could think of in this great nation of ours. Ron? Honey?
That's it.
Honey?
That's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/elections.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR News.